You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Wednesday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday with Wayne McCurry, Portfolio Manager at F&B Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. We have to start with Prosus and Naspers. I don't go into these things in great detail, but all I can say is that this is the latest attempt to unlock value that they locked in the first place.
Correct. Yes, that is 100% correct. They want to unlock the value. But I think you've got to see their announcement together with their results.
Yeah.
Because in their results, they spoke extensively about the non-10-cent businesses and how they all have a clear, defined path to profitability. So according to management, these are now on a glide slope to profitability. So that's all their business, the edutech, the food delivery, the e-commerce and the payments, because you can broadly classify their non-10-cent businesses into those four categories. I think the one of them, I just can't remember which, but the one of them is slightly profitable, but they state quite emphatically that in 2 years' time, so by their March 2025 financial year end, these companies will be profitable. So, you know, they, and as I said a few times now, they were emphatic about this. And of course, the best way to unlock value is show profits and show cash flows instead of negatives and big investments, because that's what the market knows how to value. The market doesn't really know how to value companies that may have a very exciting future, but there's no profits as such. And we've seen this so many times. You know, you get the massive hype about the new age, and at the moment it's all AI. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a year and a half ago it was all tech and all Netflix and all of these things. Ultimately, you got to make a profit for the market to give you a true lasting, let's call it a lasting valuation for your shares. You cannot just show loss after loss. With no matter how infinite the blue sky is, eventually you have to show profits. And we've seen that in quite a few companies, that massive hype, but you've fundamentally got to show profits and positive cash flows and pay dividends at some stage. You cannot just continue burning cash forever.
Okay.
So on the classified side,
yeah. I was just saying, two examples of that in the last few years would have been Tesla, with all the hype and with the Elon Musk cult that they had.
Yeah.
And in the last 6 months or so, NVIDIA. I mean, when will that ever live up to its rating?
Yes. You know, but ultimately, they've got to sell products at a profit and show a cash flow return, no matter how long the hype might last, and very, very long time. And we've seen this so many times. You know, you had the financial services bubble in the mid-90s, then you had the dot-com bubble, and then you had the, in South Africa in particular, let's call it the 2010 bubble, you know, all of those listings of construction companies and aggregate companies and, you know, quarry companies and steel companies and all of it. There was a very few, if any, still around. Yeah. You know, but those shares were hyped up enormously on the back of that, but ultimately, you know, as I've said a few times now, you've got to show profits.
Yes, you have. And okay, so I mean, Tencent had a bad time because of the severe effect of Chinese lockdowns, which were very severe on their own. Okay, so that's probably behind us now. I mean, it can flare up again. Let's face it, there is going to be another COVID crisis. There is going to be another coronavirus, a new strain of it, and it will happen again because the Chinese are very good at just saying, that's it, you can't go out of your house now for the next few weeks. But on the other hand, well, Tencent's profits halved, but they will bounce back again.
Yes.
And the market shrugged that aside because of the unraveling of the very highly convoluted cross-holding. And again, I still don't understand it. I don't know why they did it in the first place. I've read about it and I still don't understand it. Can you give it to me
all
simply?
Of this, man, look, it is a hellishly complex thing, but as far as I understand it, this was all in the efforts to unlock value.
Mm.
They wanted to take the primary listing through to Europe, and they created Prosus in this function of doing the separate listing in Europe. Now, there's at the moment, there's no difference between Naspers and Prosus. Naspers has got a few very small South African assets in it. Otherwise, they all own the underlying assets equally. And there's this cross-shareholding where the one owns a percentage of the other one, and the other one owes a percentage of the one. And it's all very complex. But your summary right in the beginning was right. It's to unlock value. And, of course, they have unlocked massive value. If you think Naspers, now my memory is a bit, I can't quite remember, but if I'm not mistaken, Naspers was 4,000 or 4,400 a share. It fell to 1,500. And it's now up at, 3,300, 3,400, somewhere around there.
Yes.
And the big rise that we've seen was the share buybacks.
Yeah, which was
so,
part
you know,
of
they tried the process listing.
A part of their another scheme which was associated with unlocking value. So they're buying back the shares. And it goes on day by day. And it's increased the NAV. That's what it's done. The net asset value of the shares has gone up because of the buybacks.
Yes. Correct. And then the secondary reason for this cross-shareholding unwind is that it will enable Naspers to buy back more shares, because there's some legal restriction as to what percentage of shares you can buy back. It's all complex. But when you do this unbundling, or not unbundling, this cross-shareholding, whatever, dissolve it, you're able to buy back more shares, or Naspers will be able to buy back more shares. But that is also in the pursuit of unlocking value. Now, I mean, they are doing a lot to the underlying businesses. They closed OLX Auto because it was making a loss. They've cut back corporate head office expenses quite materially, but so has every other tech company. You all know in the US, all the retrenchments there, because the market doesn't like this as much as what it used to. You know, it wants to see profits and it wants to value those.
Okay, let me ask you two questions now. Question number one, do you on behalf of your clients own Naspers and Prosus? If you don't...
Yes, we do.
Oh, you do, okay. Has yesterday's event, their announcements about the unwinding of the convoluted cross-holding structure that's in place now, does it want to make you buy some more?
No, we think it's approaching fair value now. So, you know, this how much is it up in 2 days now? 10%, 8%, 12%, something like that. It's a large amount that it's up.
Yes, it is.
We won't buy any more now. We're still hold a very substantial portion, very big exposure to it.
Yeah.
But, we're not going to buy any more at these levels now.
Okay, so you must have been a little bit nervous. When it came down to around a third of its value from its highs, you must have been thinking, hello, what's going on here? But now it's gone up almost three times.
But luckily enough, we gritted our teeth.
Of course you did.
And didn't bail out. We kept it through all the pain, and, you know, we've had some payback now at least.
Good. Naspers at the moment, according to my 15-minute delayed screen, is 3,300 and 80. Let's call it 3,380, up nearly 4%. Naspers doesn't appear on the top five, but obviously it's probably around about 2.5-3% higher. So good. And people are liking this.
Yes.
And maybe this will be the last unlock, and maybe this will actually have two separate companies that actually do their own thing and stop complicating matters.
The true
sake.
Unlock, the true unlock, you know, the true unlocking of value is when the underlying business make profits.
Hmm.
That's the true unlock of value. So the unlock that management always talks about now is their valuation of these businesses that are making a loss versus the market's valuation of these businesses that are making a loss. Because, you know, if you've got losses for the next 2 years and then you've got super profits, you can put a very high valuation on the business now as the directors of the company or as management of the company. But the market won't always follow you on that. You know, as I've said many times now, market actually wants to see profits ultimately. And, you know, Naspers has been investing in these businesses for a sustained time period.
I suppose the phrase would be slow burner. I mean, I understand why they've gone into them. I understand why they go into classifieds and food deliveries and mainly online classifieds, of course. But I don't know. If you could, if Naspers didn't have anything to do with Tencent and it suddenly presented a portfolio of businesses that it has and outside of Tencent, and it was, you know, classifieds and food deliveries and a couple of other things, yeah, motor company, would you look at it and say, well, that's quite exciting? Or would you say, nah, wait a second, that's too easy to eat into from another company?
Look, my own personal viewpoint is I like profits and dividends.
Yeah.
And I know that sometimes that just burns you when the go-go shares are running. It just burns you. You look like an idiot and you feel terrible and your clients moan at you, et cetera, et cetera. So in other words, I'm not a growth investor. I am, in my heart, I suppose, a value investor. I like profits. And I have obviously bought growth shares, but the growth shares I've bought were making profits. They were actually making cash flow. They had positive cash flow, just that the valuations were far higher than what the current cash flows justified. But eventually, they either caught up with the valuation or they disappeared. You know, so, and to me, I cut my teeth on Dimension Data. Huh. And Dimension Data was the go-go share of its day. And it just went up and up and up. And fortuitously, when it listed in London, and I think it got to 70 or 80 rand a share.
Higher.
I sold every last one I had. And I think the next stop was 1 rand 50 when they delisted, or 2 rand 50 or 4 rand or something like that.
It went below 2 rand. You know, but so, I do remember that day when it listed in London. It was the evening South African time. In fact, there was some, I mean, obviously a finger fault or something, or some short covering, whatever. I think it got to something like 110, 120, just with a few shares changing hands. But as you say, it had gone from 150 up to 70, 80, 100, and then came right back down again. And I still don't understand why financial services professionals can allow that sort of thing to happen. I mean, maybe it was punters. It wasn't Wayne McCurry, because he did the right thing and sold out of the thing.
No, look. The market in general, and I'm talking about the market and the participants in the market, can be incredibly poor at predicting the future in the shorter term. In other words, there's greed and fear in the shorter term. And if you're a portfolio manager and you don't own a big share that's gone up 40% in a year,
you're stuffed.
You in the doldrums, eh?
Mm.
You have got, because your clients always say, no, I'm a long-term investor as long as you're doing well. If you do badly, they become very short-term investors. So it's a difficult industry. It's a very difficult industry. And I often think that being successful in asset management is almost as bad as being unsuccessful. Because when you're successful in asset management, you become very arrogant and you start to think you know what you're doing. And the next decision will be as good as the last one. And that's not the case. So, yes, it's a very difficult industry, because that's why I truly in my heart believe that diversification is the only true lunch. You own lots and lots of shares. I don't know, in a pure share portfolio, own 30 shares. That's fine. And then just take a lot of small bets, and hopefully you get a good hit rate of 60% on your small bets against your diversified index. And then once every 5 or 6 years, a true opportunity arises, and then you go big, like when the market fell after COVID. Then you just go big. But that only happens once every 5 years or so.
maybe even more. Wayne, the way that you describe your approach to investing is very similar to the way you approach life. I mean, for example, everybody knows that you're a vintage car enthusiast. Everybody knows that you love Jaguars. So you buy a Jaguar, you won't buy it just because it's there. You'll buy it at the right price, like you'll buy a share at the right price. And then if the share was a company, you see the company being worked on, you know, the hood is up of the car and you fiddle around a bit, you replace the upholstery, you do a bit of spray painting here and there, polishing, and it takes a couple of years to get going. But that yields results slowly and steadily, like a value stock. And if you look at Steinhoff, if you look at Dimension Data, if you look at Dave King's company, Specialized Outsourcing, which was a disgrace to me, of the JSE.
EOH was exactly the same.
And Brait go shooting up to these ridiculous levels people aren't patient, and then it comes down and people say, well, why did it do that? I'll tell you why it did that, because you were impatient. You didn't actually do the work on the thing. And so in your personal life and your investment life, Brait, you have the same philosophy.
Brait was a little bit different in that they were actually doing reasonably successfully. The share price might have been too high, but they were doing reasonably successful. They were reasonably successful in their in their businesses. Then they bought that clothing company in the UK called New Look, and that's what burnt them. So it wasn't as though the market hyped up their businesses, you know, unrealistically, and then it all crashed. They actually made a poor management decision there. The other ones, I agree with you, it was pure hype.
Exactly.
And remember Tygon as well?
Oh, my goodness, Tygon. Wasn't that, what's that chap's name? He's in prison now.
I'll think of it now. No, I don't know if he's in prison, eh?
Oh, did he get out? Or he died?
No, I don't think he's Gary Porritt.
Gary Porritt, that's it. And his sidekick, that's the woman. I can't remember her name either, but.
I can't remember her name now.
No.
Yeah. But I can remember Gary, when Tygon became a top 40 company. Gary Porritt and Sue Bennett.
There we That's go. It. Well done. Well remembered. Yeah.
Gary Porritt and Sue Bennett came to see us at RMB Asset Management.
Yes.
And it was, you know, we got to buy. We didn't own the shares, thank goodness. And we tried to work out what they made, what their products were. And what we could ascertain was they made Lamberti's Long Life Biscuits. And then they made left-handed golf clubs. And that was it, from what we could work out.
And Tygon, of course, is another disaster of the JSE, a scandalous disaster, but at least they both went to prison.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they have, but I haven't kept up to date, to be honest.
Yeah, they did.
And I can remember Jack Milne. Don't know if you remember Jack Mill.
I remember him. He was a fruitarian, and he used to be a commentator on 702, and he also went to jail. Yeah.
He was a market commentator and a broker.
Yeah.
And I liked Jack. I thought he was a great guy. I thought he was a conservative, very soft-spoken guy, but he got so caught up with nefarious happenings as well, and Yeah, but it just shows you, if you diversified, even if you get something like an EOH or a Tygon, or even if you duped into it, and it's easy to be duped, you can be duped just by the share price going up, man. You can be duped by it. If you diversified, it won't destroy you. And it's one of these things I believe so firmly in. I mean, like, take my job. I get asked, what's the next winner? What must I buy? What must I buy? And the true key to investments is avoiding disasters. That's the true key. Disasters kill you. You know? And the only sure way, you know, for the 10th time, the only sure way you can avoid a disaster is to be diversified. Is own lots of shares. I mean, I don't know what the number is, but five's too few. And 40 is too many. So maybe 25, 30 shares in our 100% share portfolio, and then take your big bets on asset allocation, more so than individual shares.
Okay.
I mean, right now, you can look at the platinum shares, and Platts is 850. I mean, that is truly a buy. And I know it was below 1,000, and I said buy. Then it went up to 1,100 or 1,150. Now it's back at 850. Over time, That is enormously good value. When it might go to 700, who knows? I don't know. But on a 2 to 3 year view, it's truly value at this level.
Okay, so still like the commodity stocks.
No one's interested in buying it now because it's going down.
You specifically like the platinum stocks. I know you like commodity stocks in general, but you've started, yeah. I know, from our conversations of the past months, you like the PGM group metals and the companies that produce them. That's good. Now, Wayne, I have to ask you a couple of questions. Now, it's chilly in Johannesburg. You've got about a month and a bit before summer hits, September the 1st. Does the temperature affect the way that you eat? I know you still go to, even if it's 35 degrees in Johannesburg, you will still go to your Sunday lunchtime place and have roast dinner. Is
Sunday
that correct?
Roast place, yes. Doesn't matter what the temperature is.
Doesn't matter what it is, yeah. But when you're at home, do you think to yourself, well, no, I'm a bit hot. I want to have something light. And the reason I say this is because it's been 30 degrees for ages here and quite humid. And all I'm having this evening, I went to my greengrocer just around the corner. I bought two medium-sized artichokes and I'm going to boil them in lemony, salty water. I've made myself a chili mayonnaise and I will peel those things off, dip them in the mayonnaise and eat. Because I don't want anything stodgy. What about you?
No, I'm not big on vegetables and fruit.
Oh, gosh.
I can remember once vaguely I ate an apple many years ago. it faded a bit in my memory. No. My hot or cold, I suppose when it's cold, we'll probably have more soup.
Mm.
But we don't do cold meats and salads and stuff like that in summer. The what we eat actually doesn't vary that much. The only thing that when I go out that I'll change is that in winter I don't eat much sushi. Even though we found a lovely place in Bryanston that has the sushi buffet, but we've spoken about this before.
Yes.
And that was quite a cool day. I mean, it wasn't freezing. It wasn't like today, but it was quite a cool day. And then I had, and it was delicious. Generally, I won't have sushi in winter. It's just it's not that good.
And you won't
but
have
otherwise my yeah. eating.
You won't have stews
no,
either because
summer,
of the
yeah.
The legacy of your mother. You
no,
won't
I
have
don't stews.
Stews.
No.
No, but that's
no,
but purely
no,
down to
no,
your mother, right?
No. Yeah, that's my mother was the sweetest, dearest person.
Mm-hmm.
In life and soul of the party, she never had a bad word to say. She was really a nice person. She really was a nice person. But when it came to cooking,
rubbish.
She wasn't good. it was not good. So yeah, I don't eat stews, and I also very seldom, if maybe once every 2 years, eat cake, Kentucky Fried Chicken, because my answer to the stews at home was Kentucky opened up directly across the road from me in Kimberley, and my mom used to give me money and I ate Kentucky Fried Chicken solidly for about a year and a half. Couldn't believe how lucky I was. I didn't have to eat stew anymore. But I also Kentucky, I wouldn't call it stew, but it's more or less in the same camp. So I'm not a huge Kentucky Fried Chicken fan.
All right, so you wouldn't approve of my diet today. I woke up this morning and I've got a bag of cherries from the local greengrocer, also from the same establishment, a pineapple, which I've sliced up, and it's nice and chilled and it's lovely, and some the most delicious sweet strawberries. That was my breakfast. Lunch, I had leftover sushi from last night. What, go on about strawberries, yeah?
No, well, look, you're at 30 degrees, the leftover sushi, that's no problem.
That was good.
But
yeah.
No, strawberries, and I don't mind cherries, but strawberries, they're not good. To me, I don't like them. And on the artichokes, I actually like artichokes. I actually do like them a lot, but it could never be a meal. It'll have to be artichokes with spare ribs or artichokes with steak afterwards or artichokes with some pasta and bacon and whatever afterwards. So I can have artichokes as a bit of a starter there, and they're delicious.
They are.
But it could never, ever be a meal.
Oh, well, there we differ. You know, I have control over my food emotions.
I'm quite clearly a meat and potatoes person.
So how's the
weight? We don't actually eat that many potatoes, by the way. We don't
nor do I. Sweet potatoes, I do. And how's the weight going, Wayne, given over the winter period when you're eating, you know, the heavier foods?
No, it's this is not good news. But, you know, I'm an old bullet now. So, you know, if you're getting a bit of a paunch,
me too.
It's okay. You know what? You know, one thing about getting old, which a lot of people don't realize, yes, is it actually liberates you a lot.
Because you don't
you
care.
You just don't care anymore.
Exactly. You don't care. People,
you're not worried about wearing the latest fashion and the latest shoes and having the latest sunglasses and the latest shirt and the latest cell phone and looking dapper. You just don't care.
No, and certainly you're not going to be wearing the latest fashions, because I know you shop at Macro and Pick and Pay clothing.
Yeah. Look, I'm not like Shapiro. Shapiro is a very dapper dresser.
Oh, he's a natty fellow.
He's up to date with all the latest fashions. If you mention this type of tacky, he's got it. If you mention this type of shirt or jacket, Shapiro's got it. I mean, he's actually, I once in my life went into a branded luxury goods fashion store. It was at the Singapore airport, I think it was, and it was Paul Shark.
Never heard of him.
So I thought, let me go into Paul Shark there. And they had a pair of baggies for 6,000 rand. They were baggies. There was nothing fancy about them. The only fancy thing about them is emboldened on these baggies was Paul Shark, so that everyone knew when you wore it. Everyone knew you paid 6,000 rand for those baggies. So that's the one thing that I understand about fashion goods is people don't wear them because they are fantastic and they look nice and they're comfortable and they're great and people wear it so other people can see them wearing it,
yeah,
or carrying it in their hands or having it on their wrist. It's not as though they actually like it. They just want people to say, ooh, that's ABC, that's an XYZ, therefore that person must be a mover and a shaker and that person must have money. So I don't understand this luxury goods fashion thing. And
no.
Yeah, I've just never grasped it.
I think what you should do is invest in luxury good companies and buy your stuff at Macro and Pick and Pay. That is my philosophy.
Yeah.
And on that note, Wayne, I'm going to leave it because
I'm going to dash off. Same.
Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment, and that was Wayne on Wednesday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.